Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. We have another busy docket today, so let's get right to it. First, a Lori Vallow case update. Yes, that's right. Lori Vallow is getting an all-expense-paid trip back to Idaho. Second, a bizarre case of Utah ends in a quick guilty plea. The Weinstein jury goes home for the weekend. A professor in Ohio had to cancel class for some personal reasons. Wait till you hear what those reasons might be. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and our winner for the week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. If you have not already subscribed, we would ask if you would please do so. If you have subscribed, we appreciate you, and leave us a comment below and let us know what you think about the cases that we talk about today. First on the docket, Lori Vallow. Yes, you remember her. She is the mother of two Idaho children missing since September. Well, she's finally been arrested in the state of Hawaii on charges of child desertion. Lori Vallow is currently being held in a jail cell in Hawaii. She is awaiting extradition, and it could take up to 90 days if she fights extradition to get a governor's warrant. A governor's warrant is basically required for extraditions, unless somebody says, I'll waive extradition and go back to another state. If not, then the governor of Idaho has to basically provide proof that this is the wanted person. They will then send it to the governor of Hawaii, who will sign it and say, I am convinced that this is the same person that Idaho wants, that there's a basis for them to want her, and I will sign it and tell Idaho to come and get her. I just handled one of these, and you know, it's all fancy. It's got the governor's signature. It's got all the nice seals and everything. And that's what is going to require. For those of you who do not know, Lori Vallow and her new husband jetted off to Hawaii to, you know, get away from some things, refused to comply with court orders requiring her to come back to Idaho and produce the children. The police in Hawaii had executed a search warrant at her residence there in Hawaii. She wasn't arrested and simply, you know, she went about her way. In fact, as early as last week, they were kind of island hopping, seeing the sights. Now, you can see from her booking photo here, you know, she's obviously been spending a little time in the sun. But as she awaits for extradition over the next several weeks or month or so, she's going to lose some of that color in her face. This is a very interesting case because Ms. Vallow's previous husband, who had filed for divorce, claiming that she thought that she was some sort of a god of some type, was ultimately killed by her brother, and then her brother passed away, and her new husband, the wife, deceased. This is a tangled little web, and I think it's going to get very interesting, and it's going to get very, very messy for Ms. Vallow upon her return. But we will be watching it, and we'll bring you an update on this case, and we're working on coming up with some very specific information that I think you'll find helpful. So keep a lookout for that. Now, next on the docket, a bizarre case out of Utah that ends with a quick guilty plea. And this case involves a woman by the name of Chelsea Cook. She's 33 years old. And she is a former high school teacher in Utah. She pled guilty today to aggravated murder and some other charges, admitting she shot and killed her ex-husband's girlfriend. Now, what's unusual about this is that all this took place in November of 2019. For those of you who, you know, in the true crime genre know, most homicide cases drag out for at least a year, sometimes two. So for her to step up and plead guilty is rather unusual in a case like this. However, the facts are pretty straightforward, and they had an eyewitness. It wasn't good for Ms. Cook, so maybe she just saw the writing on the wall. The facts of the case are somewhat simple. Ms. Cook went to her ex-husband's apartment on November 25th, and while she was there, she happened to fatally shoot Lisa Williams, who is the new girlfriend of her ex-husband, and she shot Ms. Williams in front of her 3-year-old twins. Apparently, Ms. Cook was asked to leave by her ex, and when he picked up a phone to call 911, Ms. Cook briefly locked herself in the bathroom for a short time. Then she came out of the bathroom, walked toward her coat, and then, according to her ex-husband, he heard multiple gunshots and saw that Cook had pointed the gun at Williams and had fatally shot her in the chest. The ex-husband then apparently grabbed the gun from Ms. Cook. He then sat with the children. Cook's ex-husband tried to call 911 again. Ms. Cook then got up again and walked towards her coat. The man was worried that she would have another gun, so he then pinned her against the wall until the police arrived and told the kids to go into their rooms until the police did in fact arrive. Now, Ms. Cook's guilty plea exposes her to a possible penalty of 25 years to life in prison, and she's agreed to have all of her remaining penalties of the miscellaneous charges run back-to-back or consecutive, so one after another. So she could actually serve a lengthy prison sentence that'll ultimately be up to the parole board when she is in fact eligible, but she is eligible for parole. That's probably why she took the deal, because there's a difference between life with parole and life without parole. And if you can get life with parole, there's light at the end of the tunnel and you can get out. So, interesting case, unusual that it ended so quickly. Next on the docket, a Harvey Weinstein trial update. Now, the jury has gone home for the day and they will resume their deliberations on Monday. This particular jury has asked a lot of questions. They've asked for information for transcripts to be read back. We talked about that yesterday, that that's a very unusual procedure, the fact that they can get transcripts apparently in New York, something I've never seen. The jury did tell the judge today that they asked a question in a hypothetical. So no one knows exactly what the count is. And frankly, it could just be a way not to get one side all fired up and excited or another. Sometimes you simply do not know by the jury questions. But they said that what if they were hypothetically deadlocked on the most serious charges, but they had reached their decision on the lesser charges? What would happen? The judge basically brought them out and instructed them to continue their deliberations. Now, no trial court wants to do a case over again. Okay. I can tell you no defense attorney wants to do a case over again. You usually have your one shot at the jury. The second time around, the prosecution gets to fix all of their problems that they had in the first case. And, you know, you basically gave it what you got. And it's tough to come up with a new theory the second time around. I personally, anytime I've had a case where it's hung, second time around, didn't quite go as well. So the defense, I'm sure, they'll say they want a hung jury and do it all over again, but they really do not. So what is the judge to do? You can't just keep telling people to go back and keep deliberating and come to a decision. Well, a judge can do that for a certain amount of time. Now, remember, this case took basically 3 weeks to try. So the fact that the jury has deliberated a week isn't necessarily a long time where the judge has to say, you know, hey, we've been back here for forever, and you know, we're just going to start all over again. It's obviously they're deadlocked. But what the judge will give in lots of cases, it's called a modified Allen instruction, and this is actually an instruction that goes back to a case, U.S. v. Allen, which actually goes back to 1896, and it's an instruction, what they call an Allen charge. And it's given when, after deliberating, a jury reports that they're deadlocked and they're unable to decide on a verdict. This jury instruction, like I said, goes back and it's been modified since 1896. And, you know, the versions often today basically say, hey, a lot of people spend a lot of time, effort into doing this case. And if you can't reach a decision on this case, guess what? We're going to have to do it all over again at a lot of time, expense, you know, trauma to people that have to come back and testify, etc. And so usually the judges will say that obviously, you know, if you have your decision that's being made, there's nothing wrong with reevaluating your decision. And if everyone else is made their decision one way or the other, and you're kind of the holdout, maybe you should go back and reevaluate your decisions. And if you can continue to deliberate without causing any harm to other people, then you know, try to do so. And so the judge didn't say that in, you know, give an actual modified Allen instruction, but the judge said it without calling it a modified Allen instruction. And so clearly the judge wants to reach a verdict. Their decision has to be unanimous one way or the other. So obviously if it's a hung jury, whether it's 11 for guilty or 11 not guilty and one, you know, it doesn't matter. That one person could be saying either guilty or not guilty, obviously contrary to what everybody else is doing, or it could be completely split. We don't know. We may never know, but it has to be unanimous. And if they can't reach that decision, then, you know, ultimately the judge will have to declare a mistrial. They may take the verdict on the counts that they can agree upon. Obviously, if they're not guilty, those charges are done. If it's guilty, then obviously the DA needs to decide whether it's worth going forward and trying to prove the charges that were hung, or if they just take their victory there and move on. It's going to depend. The juries will have a weekend to think about it. I know that jurors are charged with not reading any newspaper clippings, watching any TV related to this particular case, and not talk to family. But let's face it, jurors are human. They're going to look. They're going to see. I believe jurors will take their job seriously. I've said that before. Obviously, the jurors are taking their jobs very seriously in this particular case. It's 7 men, 5 women that are going to have to make this decision. And think about it. How hard is it to get 12 people to agree on anything? Ask yourself, when you ask 12 people in a room, what should we do for lunch? You're probably going to get 12 different answers. So the evidence has to be very overwhelming, right? Proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And if they can't have, if they don't have it, the juror's oath and obligation is to say then not guilty. And obviously, if they've proven it, their oath and obligation is to say guilty. Hopefully, there's no other side issues. Other people, you know, it should just be the jurors either believe or disbelieve the evidence. They can believe some of it, part of it, or none of it. Or all of it. It just depends on how those witnesses testified. And like we said before, only the jurors are the ones who have seen all the evidence, seen all the witnesses on the stand, looked at their demeanor, their ability to recall, recollect. How did they act on cross-examination? Those are very important. So we'll see how that ultimately comes out. Next on the docket, a professor in Ohio had to cancel class for personal reasons. Wait till you hear what those personal reasons are. Oops, by the way, she was just happened to be possibly torturing and killing her husband. Seems like a good reason why you're not going to be able to make it to class today. That's right. An economics professor by the name of Gao Win Park is 41, and she is charged with the murder of her husband, Sung Nam, 41. She's an economics professor and apparently had to cancel class because, well, she's being held in the Dallas County Jail in Des Moines, Iowa, on a $5 million cash-only bond. It is alleged that Professor Nam bound her husband's hands and feet using zip ties that were apparently in the home. She tied him to the chair, then stuffed a piece of clothing into his mouth, and then put duct tape over that. She then used more duct tape to put a towel over his head. Ultimately, the police were called to the residence where they found Ms. Park trying to perform CPR, but it was too late. Mr. Nam is now deceased. No information thus far on the motive, but to bind and gag and more than likely suffocate your husband, it's kind of personal. Be curious to see what her explanation is going to be at court. We'll see if she will make as a quick guilty plea as Ms. Cook did in Utah. Somehow, I doubt it. And finally on the dock today, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day is Jason Cruz, 22. He was an assistant manager at Jimmy John's. And apparently, Mr. Cruz was a little short on cash. So what's the thing to do? Go rob your employer. That's right. He cut the power, went into the store, used the keys that he had to enter the safe, stole about $750. But the mistake that Mr. Cruz made when he was trying to get away was, well, basically, he locked his car keys in the store. And that key ring had the keys to the store, so he couldn't get back in. Ultimately, he called his general manager to let him back in and ultimately confessed due to the fact that, well, I guess he felt a little guilty about it. And he had no good explanation for being at the restaurant well after hours. Wasn't going to take a genius to figure out that he was the last one there and the money was gone. He apparently claimed he had some financial issues. But yes, Jonathan Cruz, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. A quick recap of our dumb criminal contestants of the week. First, we had our disrobing shoplifter who was stealing steaks from the grocery store and literally became naked as he was trying to escape. And when he was shot with a taser by the police officers, happened to get shot in the testicles. Our next contestant was our young man who was peeing on the police car when he had to relieve himself. And finally, our 36-year-old woman who called the police to say that she needed help because her parents were cutting off her phone bill. You remember her, the 36-year-old realtor? Well, she is our dumb criminal contestant of the week. And yes, all she has to do is call us, assuming she gets her phone turned on, and we will send her a Crime Talk mug. Now, you can have a Crime Talk mug, and you don't even have to become a contestant for the dumb criminal. That's right. It's cheaper if you just get one yourself than becoming the dumb criminal. Because if you become a dumb criminal, you usually got arrested, you had to pay bond, get yourself an attorney, the embarrassment of it all, you just don't want it. So you can go to the link below and get your mug if you choose to do so. And then you can send us a Crime Talk mugshot and we'll put it up on our Facebook and Instagram. And we will say thank you for doing that. Thank you for tuning in today. We are actually going to be live tomorrow at 11 a.m. We hope to see you then. Have a great day.